Did you know that even the happiest couples argue?
Mm-hmm.
The best of us still have disagreements. Research shows that it's not the absence of fights that predicts the success or failure of marriage. What matters is how you fight and how you fix those fights. Today, we're exploring the science of repair. Repair is a process of mending those inevitable ruptures so that you can come back together stronger.
If you plan to be married or in a committed relationship for a long time, then repair is not optional. It is necessary for any modicum of success. Stick with us today as we explore the science of repair here on Master Your Marriage.
Did you know the average couple waits 6 years to get help in their marriage?
Yeah, that's 6 years of pain, hurt, and frustration.
Hi there, I'm Charlotte Snow.
And I'm Robert Snow.
And welcome to Master Your Marriage,
where we believe that having an amazing marriage should never feel like hard work and shouldn't be a guessing game.
This is the show for married couples who want to discover a scientifically proven approach to building a masterful marriage and have fun while doing it.
So if that's you, you're in the right place. Let's dive in.
Well, let's start out with a question. Raise your hand out there if you have ever felt a small argument snowball into something bigger.
I think that's
our hands are up.
I think that's every small argument.
Every small argument.
Actually, I think that's every large argument. Always started as a small little like sniper jab.
Yep. So see, we are right there with you. And repair is your way out.
And that's exactly what we want to cover today. We're going to turn to the science and discuss why repair matters. And we're going to dive into the key research from experts like Dr. John Gottman, Dr. Ed Tronick. And then we'll wrap it up with practical takeaways for your own relationships. By the end, you'll have the tools to make your relationship better and even more resilient than it was before.
Okay, so repair is probably one of my favorite topics.
Or at least most used topics.
I use this all the time in coaching. It is probably my favorite topic in the whole Gottman system of relationship science.
I think probably because when you get to the end of this episode, you're going to realize what a superpower repair is in your relationship.
Absolutely.
At least I hope you do.
And, you know, when we think of the word repair, what we generally think of repair in terms of fixing something that's broken.
Yeah.
You know, we take the car to the mechanic. Why? Maybe the alternator is broken. You know, we call the appliance repairman to come over. Why? Because maybe the ice maker is no longer working. But in relationship science, repair is less about fixing and it's more about how do we get things back on track? We're not waiting for something to be broken.
Yeah. Absolutely. Let's pause for a minute and talk about the key difference between master couples and the disaster couples. And I think you might get a feel for who they are. The masters are really, really good at repair. They have strategies and methods to constantly be repairing in their relationships. The disasters, so maybe not. The word repair refers to any statement or action.
Yep.
That prevents negativity from escalating out of control. So what does that mean?
Well, you know, I think the reason why I love this concept so much is because of that word you said, any.
Yeah.
Any action, any word, anything that you do that helps to prevent negativity from spiraling out of control. And the key thing with repair is that you do it early. You do it often. You're always repairing. So anytime you sense any kind of disconnection, something feels a little bit off, what can I do to move us back into harmony? So it really, because it's anything, literally any statement, any action, it leaves tons of room for creativity.
And you just said tons of room and I know I cut you off on that one part, but I love as I think about the couples that we talk to and we interact with a lot of couples, I love hearing their stories about their creative ways.
Yes.
And it reminds me of, so we were sharing with a couple, I think we were at a hotel. We were sharing with a couple like, some strategies that we use and how we use, and what they said, carrots.
Yeah.
But that's the point. It could be absolutely anything.
Right.
And for them, their pattern interrupt or repair is they'll just say carrots. Can you imagine that being in the middle of a disagreement? Like, I can't believe you didn't do that. Carrots.
Right.
You're like, what? Carrots, what?
Yeah. That was just, oh, that's a reset button for their relationship. Yeah. They know that that means it has a specific meaning. That's just what I love about it. And because every relationship is different, finding the repair strategies that work for you and that work for your relationship can actually become this sort of fun game, like carrots, that belongs to just the two of you. Certain words that have certain meanings just for the two of you that you know this signals, let's repair. Yeah. Let's move back into harmony.
And it's kind of cool in relationships that you have those things.
Yeah, secret languages.
Yeah, like a secret language. So let's zoom out.
Yes.
We're going to go up to 35,000 feet and we're going to take a view of repair. And so repair is the intentional efforts on one or both partners to mend these little ruptures.
Right.
And sometimes that looks like de-escalating a conflict. Other times it's a kind gesture to sort of restore connection. Maybe they're just touching or holding hands.
A hug.
It can even be a statement or an action or just something totally silly like carrots that sort of helps you rebuild trust and disconnection after that little rupture or harm.
Yeah. And as you brought up that example of carrots, again, what I would just say, a simple way of saying it is it's like hitting the reset button.
Yes.
That gets your relationship back on track.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's what repair is. Now, if we want our relationship to go the distance, we want our marriages to last, repair is not optional. It really is not, because every relationship has ruptures. So there has to be repair. It's a necessary ingredient in every successful relationship. And we're going to talk about why that is. And to do that, we're going to turn to the giants in relationship science. And we're going to look at the research. And we're going to talk a little bit about Dr. John Gottman. And we're going to talk about Ed Tronick. I think Robert will start us out by talking about some of Ed Tronick's work.
You may be familiar with it. I know we've talked about it on the show, but Dr. Ed Tronick is a developmental psychologist whose work started with infants, but it also applies beautifully to adult and more mature relationships. And we've referenced his now pretty famous, the Still Face experiment here on the show before. And if you've not heard of it, it's really cool to kind of go and take a look at it. I suggest just dig it up on YouTube. So it's called the Still Face experiment and under Ed Tronick. And his work showed how relationship resilience is formed through this very important cycle of harmony, disharmony, and then repair. And I'm sort of making this little bell curve with my hands, but it's super important to think about where we're in harmony at the top. We take this dip into disharmony and then we come back up through repair, back up to harmony.
So what do those words mean? Let's look at them a little bit deeper. So when we're in harmony, what do we feel? We feel connected.
Yeah, we're in sync.
Intimate. We're in sync with each other. And then something happens all the time. Things are happening, but something happens that causes a little bit of a rupture. It could be a tiny little rupture, just a face, you know, where an expression or something that just kind of triggers you or rubs you the wrong way. But some kind of rupture happens that causes a feeling of disharmony, which then necessitates in a healthy relationship, some sort of repair needs to happen in order to bring that connection back into harmony again. So harmony, disharmony, repair, closeness, rupture, and then a return to closeness again, over and over.
Yeah. And it happens often. So this cycle, as Charlotte mentioned, happens more often than we think it does.
Mm-hmm.
Some people think it might happen once a week, and it could. Or it could happen 10 times in one dinner conversation. This cycle happens in every relationship. Actually, not just personal relationships. It can happen with your friends, your spouse, your partner, a mother with her baby, in a romantic relationship. It's just going to happen. And when you learn more about this, you're going to start noticing this cycle and how it applies across your life.
And here's something really interesting. You mentioned mothers and babies, and that's what Ed Tronick's research was on, mothers with babies. But when you look at the connection between a mother and a baby, just for funsies, let's just guess, what do you think the percentage of time is that a mother and a baby is in sync together, mother and baby in sync, in harmony, in connection? We call it attunement. What percentage of the time do you think that's happening?
I mean, I know the answer, but I would say...
What would you have guessed if you didn't know the answer?
I would have guessed that mothers and babies are in harmony like 90% of the time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I feel like moms always are attuned to the needs of the child.
Right. Here's what's interesting. When we look at attachment theory, when we look at mothers with their babies, we learn a lot about attachment theory. And that repair piece that we're talking about plays a huge role in whether that child will be securely attached in life. So in a healthy mother infant dyad, we call a dyad two people. So a healthy mother and infant dyad, Edtronic has observed that attunement was only happening about 30% of the time.
I know, that stat blew me away.
30% of the time that mother and baby are actually in sync. Then ruptures are happening about another 30% of the time. So rupture is that disharmony that we talked about. And then repair was happening another 30% of the time. So 30, 30, 30. 30% of the time, mother and baby are in attunement, connected. And another 30% of the time, they're in disharmony. And then 30% of the time, the mother is repairing, whether she's cooing or settling or soothing the baby, there's a repair that's happening.
So when you think about that, if we go back to this like bell curve that I sort of am shaping with my hands, you would think that moms and babies are in sync all of the time.
Constant bliss, right?
Right. I mean, not always, but like, oh, there's 20% of the time that the baby's unhappy and the mom's, you know, struggling to kind of bring them back together. And if that happens in a relationship where there is so much focus on connection, how could it not happen in our relationship?
Of course, even maybe more so.
Yeah, you would think so. So and, if we think about it happening once.
And so what I also want to come back to is that that is in a healthy mother-infant dyad. So even as long as that repair is happening 30% of the time, there's a 70% chance that that child is going to grow up with secure attachment. So that means that it's really about the repair and how important the repair is. It's not a bad thing that they are only in attunement 30% of the time. What's important is that we're repairing.
Oh, I love that. Right. And as we see in healthy relationships, they're not in a constant state of bliss. Like, we know that. And I think in your relationship, you know that. We're always in this dynamic dance of harmony, disharmony, repair over and over and over. And this cycle is totally normal. It's necessary. With infants, successful repairs keep the child happy and resilient, and they have healthy, secure attachments with their mothers. And then in our relationships, it works the same.
In our relationships, it's exactly the same. I know this is a show about marriage and committed relationships, but it works the same in our relationships as it does with that mother and child. And that's why you said earlier, it's a beautiful comparison to Edtronic's work.
Yeah, absolutely.
That dance of harmony, disharmony, and repair it's necessary. You use the word necessary, and I want to emphasize that. It's necessary because where we learn the skills of loving one another, those skills don't happen in harmony. Those skills happen when we are repairing, when we're repairing the rupture.
Yeah.
And so that is when the resilience is built. That is when the trust in each other is built. And the research backs this up. You know, there's a high correlation between trust and repair, between satisfaction in your relationship and repair. Even Tronic himself has said, resilience grows not from perfect harmony, but through rupture and through repair. So rupture is what's going to build your relationship resilience as long as you're doing the repair.
That's the same thing with life. Like, life is about making mistakes, learning from those mistakes, and then getting better. If we're in a situation where we never make mistakes, we're never going to grow.
That's right.
This is why marriages help you grow up.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah. Because you're going to make mistakes.
That's right.
All right. Let's turn to one of the giants in this field, Dr. John Gottman. And if you've ever listened to our show before, you know that he is the one that we talk about a lot. We mentioned the Gottman work. We're trained in Gottman methods. He is the one of, and probably the most renowned researcher that spent decades studying couples in various stages of their life. They'd done a longitudinal study where they brought couples back every 5 years. And then most recent of his research was their love lab at the University of Washington, where they observed couples for 24 hours. And they had cameras, microphones, and they just watched them deal with real-time conflicts while monitoring them. Gottman has discovered through his work, there are 8 predictors for divorce. And he was able to predict which couples would stay together, which couples would divorce, so that maybe stay together happily or unhappily, and which couples would divorce. But he can predict with a 93% accuracy the health and happiness of your relationship, mm-hmm. whether you would stay together. He called the two groups, as we mentioned earlier, the masters and the disasters. Funny thing is, in his 8 predictors for divorce, do you think repair was on the list?
It was definitely, definitely on the list.
Gottman says that the success or failure of repair attempts is a key predictor of whether a relationship survives or struggles.
That's right. So when repair, and what his research shows is that when repair consistently fails, maybe one person is trying to make repairs, but that repair is being rejected and repair isn't happening, it becomes a top predictor, one of those 8 predictors for divorce. But conversely, of course, the masters do it differently. The masters do repair really well, and that makes a huge difference. When couples repair and they master this art of repair,
master the art of repair.
There's,
I love that. Yeah.
There's two really big things that's happening for them in their relationship. One, the repair is preventing negativity from spiraling out of control, which relates to another one of his predictors, which was that when you look at the percentage of negativity to positivity in a relationship during conflict, the masters had a 5-to-1 ratio of positivity to negativity. Yeah. And outside of conflict, they had about a 20-to-1 ratio of positivity to negativity. So what repair is doing is it's preventing that negativity from taking hold and preventing that negativity from spiraling out of control. The other thing repair is doing for a relationship is that it's keeping couples from getting flooded, which happens to be another predictor for divorce. So you can see how these are all woven together. But if you are not repairing, your nervous system is going to be in potentially in a chronic state of fight or flight.
It's going to be overdrive the whole time. Yeah.
Be flooded all the time. And when couples are flooded all the time, they're in this high state of stress and they are not wise. When you are in a state of fight or flight, you cannot be relational. You cannot communicate effectively. You cannot be wise.
I love this new term, and I'm trying to figure out, it's probably not a new term, but you've mentioned it a little bit more. It's called, you said people can't be relational.
Mm-hmm.
I love that. Not only does it mean I can't relate to somebody, but it means that I'm not really good at being in a relationship.
You know, I had a client I was working with yesterday, and he's been using all these tools. And he said, you know, it's so much bigger than I realize. It's so much bigger than just my relationship with, I mean, I came to you for work and help with my marriage. He's like, but I'm noticing that I can't be relational at work either. When I work with my coworkers, when I'm doing a job and I'm working with a particular client, you know, I feel myself, I'm starting to notice my nervous system, where it's at. Am I in a state of being on the edge of fight or flight? And if I am, I know I need to self-talk. I need to breathe. I need to get myself back on track, because it's impacting every relationship. And so that's why I say we can't be relational, because if we are not in our window of tolerance where our nervous system is balanced, we cannot communicate to others in a way that is effective. We're going to be harsh, or we're going to withdraw, or we're going to shut down, and we just can't communicate.
Not fit for human interaction.
Exactly. So exactly.
I'll say that sometimes. I'm not fit for human consumption, right?
Exactly. Right. Exactly.
Okay. So we've covered what repair is, why it's a key predictor of relationship success. I hope you've grasped that.
Yes.
Because it's super important.
You can tell I'm kind of excited about this topic.
Yeah.
I'm kind of passionate about it. It's so important.
Because it's so important. So let's come down from our 35,000 foot view and get really granular. And we're going to talk about how we do repair. Okay. So remember, repair is any attempt, any action, any statement, any gesture, big or small, that de-escalates the tension and brings you back on track. And it can be anything from a smile to, I don't know, anything.
Yeah. And I can't emphasize that enough, that we'll give you some ideas right now, but it really means that there's so many more ways to do repair than what we're going to share with you over the next couple of minutes. It's not a one size fits all. It's about what works best for your unique relationship. I had a client just yesterday who said he felt a little tension there. So he felt a little bit of a rupture happening. You can sense that. You can sense when something feels a little disconnected. And he said, I'm going to go throw some steaks on the barbecue. I'm going to go heat up the barbecue and throw some steaks on for us. That was a repair. So it really is something that you can customize to you, your unique relationship. But there is an exercise that I have couples sort of workshop, where I give them scenarios and I give them potential statements that they could say in a certain situation. And I have them go back and forth practicing, and they can read off one of my proposed statements, or they can come up with their own.
Yeah, it's like anything. You know, the tools that we give you and any other tool that you would learn, the more you practice it, the easier it becomes. And then the less you need to use sort of that guide or that tool. But
to your point, I have a friend who is a master pianist. And he said to me one time, he's like, it's kind of like learning to play the piano. First, you have to learn all the rules, and your teacher is going to make you play it perfectly. Every pause, every note has to be played perfectly. And then after that, basically you throw all the rules out and you play the piano the way that you feel like playing the piano.
Oh man.
And
I wish I could even play the piano with the rules.
That's Nathan.
Oh, yeah.
He's that amazing. Would make sense. Yeah. But it's the same in all of these tools that we give you guys, just practice them kind of note by note. And then after that, you could customize them and let all the rules go out the window.
I love it.
Okay. So Robert and I are going to go through the same worksheet that I would give to you if you were working with me in coaching. And we'll just do a few of these scenarios, and we'll just give you an example of what maybe some options are that you could say, and then maybe what we would say if it was us. So,
and there's lots of different scenarios here. And on the worksheet, there's probably 5 or 6 different choices from each of the categories.
So the first category would be, what if we are in a conversation that starts to feel really stuck or off track?
We went off the rails.
This is going off the rails, we need to hit the reset button. What could we say or do in that situation? What would you say, Robert?
So I picked that we're getting off track. Can we start over? I think we're losing the path here.
Let's start over. I would probably say, this feels awful. Could we start over? Can we start again?
Yeah. And you can even just see just the difference. She's about feeling, mm-hmm. and I'm about staying on track, at least when it comes to this, just this one thing.
But why is this a repair? This is a repair because something negative was starting to escalate, and some sort of statement or action was taken to prevent that negativity from spiraling out of control.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, did it have to even be words?
No, could have been anything else.
I could have gotten up and gotten you a cup of tea. Well, you would have got me a cup of tea, or I could have got you a glass of water, or I could have come over and touched your hand. Like, it could be a gesture.
I love that. I'm smiling because I'm sitting here thinking, like, I probably would have got you a cup of tea.
Yeah.
And then if you'd have got me a cup of tea, that wouldn't have been a repair.
Exactly.
It would have been something else.
Okay. Let's say something harsh was said, and and there's like, ooh, you kind of hit a boundary there. That was, that's a limit. So how do we set a limit without just coming across and blaming, you know, what a jerk you were for doing something? So what could I do to set a limit?
Which one do you like?
I would probably say, could you talk to me like I'm someone you love?
Yeah.
Could you talk to me like I'm someone you love?
I picked other, and I don't remember what I would have said.
I think you usually say, that was a little sharp.
Yeah, I think that's what it was. Yeah.
And for us, maybe another couple, that would not be a repair. But you say that all the time. You're like, oh, that was a little harsh, or that was a little sharp. And because we've been married for 33 years, and I know that that's a repair, I accept that as a repair. And I'm like, you're right. That was a little sharp. So that works for us.
It's always fun when you hear your repair attempts come back at you. Hmm. So mine is like, oh, it's a little sharp. And it's sort of like mine. And then she'll say that it was a little sharp. I'm like, ooh, Robert was being turd. Okay. That's not good.
Okay. This one Robert doesn't do very often, but I think it's a good one to talk about. What if I'm starting to feel overwhelmed, stressed, and I feel myself getting dysregulated, and I might want a little help in calming down? I'm not to the point where we need to take a break yet, but what could I say to ask for help in calming down? Do you have anything?
Can you give me a hug?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that would be great.
Yeah.
Could you give me a hug right now?
Yeah.
I might say something like, I'm feeling, and this is my language, and you guys know I use these words. You probably don't use these words, but I would probably say something like, I'm feeling a little dysregulated right now. Could we slow things down? Or could you just hold me for a minute?
Yeah.
All right. What are some other scenarios we have on here?
I like this one for when I messed up, but I know that there's some other ones.
Okay. So when I mess up, what would be a repair if I know that I was harsh and I catch it, which is fun. I'm thinking of a client that I had recently, and And he's been learning repair, and he said something, and then he remembered our conversation. And so he went right into her and he's like, "I'm sorry, that was really harsh." And so right there, that is a repair.
Absolutely. Especially if you've not experienced that before, when your partner repairs rapidly, you're just like, Oh,
that's awesome.
I wanted to be pissed off here. And now all of a sudden, now I'm no longer mad at you.
Right. So
what happened to this grudge I was going to hold? It was making me stronger.
So what could you say if you knew you messed up?
Oh, my favorite one's the first of the list. It seems like I might have had a hand in writing this. I'm like, I blew that. Let me start over.
I blew that.
Yeah, I screwed that. I'm a jerk. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I just believe in owning it. Like, if you did, just own it. And a lot of people will start right away just going like, wow. Guard goes down when somebody owns their mistake.
Yeah. Yeah, you would say I blew that. I would probably say I messed that up. Can I try that again?
Yeah.
What about defensiveness? It's also on the same page here.
Okay.
When I'm starting to feel defensiveness. So this is me starting to feel a little reactive and starting to get that feeling of defensiveness. What could I say? I would probably say, I don't know what you would say, but I'll go first. Because you're looking at me like you're still thinking about it.
Oh, I have an answer for this.
Oh, you do? Go ahead. Yeah.
No, I like yours. Go for it.
I would say, I'm feeling a little bit defensive right now. Could you say that again in a little bit of a less charged way?
Yeah. And you've done that.
Mm-hmm.
You said that. Yeah. I'm going to look right at the camera. I'm not self-aware enough to know when I'm getting defensive. So I'm not really good at answering this question.
Really?
No, I don't think so. Like, I think I get defensive. I know that. And I know it later. I just don't know that I'm self-aware enough to catch it in the moment. Unless you've said it. And then I'm like, oh, yeah, maybe I'm being a little bit defensive.
Okay.
Yeah. And I think that's the point. Like, not all these questions are going to apply to everybody, because you look at it and you're like, I don't feel any of these things. So that's not there. But other pieces will be. And as you read this, you're like, oh, she's feeling defensive. Maybe I'm coming a little too strong.
Right.
Right. That's a great way for just, so my self-awareness is there. Mm-hmm. I just don't know if I'm feeling defensive. I might feel reactive.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, why did that spin?
I definitely feel defensive. I definitely know when I'm feeling defensive.
Yeah. See, and that's different. I think it's
also, maybe I like it. I don't know.
Right. I think I might feel reactive, which is not written down.
So here. Then what would you say?
Yeah. It's like, I don't know. I'm a little spun up.
I'm a little spun up.
Yeah.
Can we slow things down?
Yeah.
Perfect. Perfect. Yeah.
So it's really just about adapting it for, you know, for each of you. So
I want to do one more that I think is,
I like,
it's on
when
the
I
last
need clarification. I
okay.
Like
go ahead. Read that one. When you need clarification.
So when I need clarification for clearing up misunderstandings, and this, I love this. A long time ago, I was taught this by a guy, and he wasn't the most tactful person, but he would always say, "I don't understand." Now, and that was his way of saying, "I just need clarity on what it is that you need from me." But this is when I need clarification. And my favorite phrase here is just help me understand. And that's a way of just thinking, slowing down. I'm trying to suspend my immediate judgment, my immediate knee jerk reaction. Like, I can't do any of this because you haven't taught me enough about it. Right. Instead, just like, help me understand your point of view. Let me into what your thinking is. And so I can just slow it down. I can be receptive. I want to be curious.
Yeah. Yeah. And I like help me understand a lot more than I don't understand.
Yeah. Which is, I mean, he taught me that. It was great. Mm-hmm. I just think there's a better way to say it.
Perfect. I want to add one more here. And our worksheet actually has a lot more. We're just going to cover a few.
Yeah, there's only on page two. On the last page,
and I think this is an important one, when you have two different perspectives, it's difficult to settle down and stay calm when you're listening to one another's perspectives that are different. But when you're trying to hear what is true about what the other person is saying, and you want to validate their perspective, even though you have maybe a slightly different one, there's a couple here that I love.
Oh, I love this. I actually love all of those.
Why don't you read them all, and then we'll end with that.
Okay. So when I want to acknowledge truths from my partner and accept influence, first one is, I see your point and I'm willing to adjust my view. Is there a way we can find middle ground? Second one is, you're right about that. Mm-hmm. Insert whatever that is. My favorite of this is, actually my next two are probably favorite, which is, you're starting to convince me.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think that indicates that you're receptive to another person's point of view. And then I never thought of things that way.
That's my favorite.
Yeah. I like those two out of the list.
So accepting influence, which we'll do a whole nother, we'll do a whole show on that again soon, but accepting influence is so critical. And you have these two perspectives that feel at odds, but there are pieces of truth. And if you can just acknowledge those pieces, even if it's 5%, yeah, it goes a long way at creating a repair. And so if you can just say something like, you know, I've never thought of things that way. That is so huge in calming the situation down and preventing negativity from escalating.
I love this worksheet, by the way.
All right. So this worksheet is available in our Stand store. You can get it with all of those different ideas and more.
We'll link in the show notes.
We'll put a link. It is stand.store/masteryourmarriage, but we will link it in the show notes as
absolutely.
Well. But I think that will be a wrap for this episode.
Thanks for joining us here at Master Your Marriage. If you've enjoyed this episode and you found it useful, we'd love for you to just scroll to the bottom of your player, rate, review, and share this with other people. If somebody you know might benefit from this, please share that with them. And you know what we'd really love, especially on this episode, because I think we found carrots to be one of those funny things. Mm-hmm. If you and your partner, or you've heard of a really cool little pattern interrupt or a way to
repair,
maybe a one word or something, come over to Instagram. We're at Master Your Marriage on Instagram and share that with us. We'd love to just kind of add those in our repertoire and share those with other people as well.
Absolutely. Remember, be kind to each other this week. Put each other first. Remember, it's the small things done often that create the biggest impact.
Until next time.
Thank you for listening to Master Your Marriage. If you have a topic you'd like us to cover, then we want to hear from you. Just go to MasterYourMarriagePodcast.com and send us your question.
Oh, and while you're there, you can also check out our retreats and events and even apply for coaching.
And make sure to subscribe to the podcast so you get advanced notice of when the next episode drops, plus show notes and many extras. Thanks again for tuning in.